Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am joined by Kaya Watkins, SVP of Clinical Development at Catalyst Clinical Research. Kaya, it's been a while since you and I first jumped on a call. Look, how have you been? Big smile on your face there. I like that.
I've been doing great, James. It's great to see you. Congrats on the news of your pending new addition to the family. It's been wonderful. Summer's always nice. It's been good weather here in the U.S. I was recently in the U.K. and unfortunately a little bit of rain, but generally nice weather. So I'm in good spirits.
Good, good, good. Well, look, I'm sure our UK audience will be used to that sort of conversation with anyone that they deal with stateside. So we'll move on before we wind people up. Yes. So look, I've given you a quick introduction in terms of, look, your job title, your job role there. But look, I guess in your own words, if you were to give us if you were, say, down the pub or speaking to someone that you've not met before, how would you explain, your role, your company, what you do?
Well, it's easy and complicated. So I think depending on the audience, I describe it in a couple of different ways. But at Catalyst Clinical Research, I currently have responsibility for our CRO operation. So as you and I have discussed in the past, Catalyst is a mid-sized CRO. We provide specialty solutions to industry. Both in focused in on oncology, oncology clinical services, as well as flexible solutions that we offer industry as well too, in the way of functional solutions as well as staffing augmentation. Mm-hmm. I run our CRO operations, so that includes our clinical functions as well as our data science functions. If I were talking to my children, I'd say I get to do a really cool job, which is really manage the baseball team. So I'm a bit in the background. And my goal and my objective is really to ensure that they're able to do their best work. And that's really what excites me. So that's probably how I would describe my job in a more layman's way.
I like that. Now, you know what? I've never had anyone explain it like that before. But when you think about it and you do detail it as if you're speaking to a six-year-old, I can't remember how old your kids are, but that's kind of like what it's like, right?
It is. It is. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, look, amazing stuff. I guess, like many of people that that we've had on the show, you've reached quite a lofty height and title these days. As you say, you're kind of sitting in the background, that the manager of the baseball team or the CRO operations, as it may be. But look, how did you first get into this industry? Because so many people have not necessarily chose it coming out of, high school, college, university. So, tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually amazing to me that I've been in this industry now for about 25 years, and now there are specific programs in university focused in on clinical research and clinical development. But of course, back then there weren't. And so I don't know anybody, to be quite frank with you, James, that has sort of grown up in this industry that aspire to be a clinical research professional. And so I'm no different than anybody else. So interestingly enough, I started out my professional career in the academic setting. So I worked for a university-based hospital in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Yeah. My job was actually to be a nutritional specialist at a hospital that really served more of an acute population. And I actually did essentially food lines, so TPN bags for patients that were malnourished. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes these were cancer patients who were, in the perioperative setting. And it was great. I was, new in the industry. I'm a glass half full type of person. So always had a smile on my face. Really just enjoyed, all the great opportunities that I was getting that early in my career. And it was interesting because as I was really getting more and more entrenched in my role. At the time, it was Graduate Hospital, which is unfortunately not in business in that form anymore, because of funding challenges, which we've seen in the academic setting quite a bit here in the States. But I'd have an opportunity to actually walk the floor and meet and say hello to patients. And, you know, oftentimes they were just looking for somebody to talk to. And so I'd find myself just engaging with people and really getting to know a bit about their lives, their families, their interests, the things that they were also missing out on because they were grappling with, with long-term diseases. In many cases, you know, it was cancer. And it really opened my eyes to a whole new world of drug development and really thinking about the patient in mind, right? And I don't know that I thought of it that way 25 years ago.
I was going to say, did you realize that at the time? Because I guess, you know, at the time, you're probably, you know, as you say, you are a very smiley character. You know, if you're walking the halls, you know, you're brightening people's day, it's fantastic. But you probably didn't realize, right?
I didn't realize it. And it made me sad. But I felt encouraged in many ways. People's stories were amazing stories. You hear people talking about, being vets as an example, and making decisions to really put their lives on the line, coming back home to the safety of their loved ones, and then having to grapple with cancer. Wow. And these were people that were fighters. So it was always so, you know, it was so enlightening to get to know people and to get to know their stories and realize that at the end of what I did, which was a fairly mundane job, right? I worked in the infirmary. I was kind of in the dungeon of that hospital, a bit removed until I actually got an opportunity to go and walk the floor when I was delivering these TPN bags, and then just taking the time and getting to know people. And at that moment, I realized, I think I want to do something that allows me to do this all the time, that allows me to play some small part in helping to bring, some encouragement to people. Mm. And I didn't really know what that was, James, right? I was young. I was just getting started. But I think that was the point.
It was the people that kind of pulled you towards it then, because kind of that snapshot of getting out of the basement, as you say, to actually go and see real people and walk the floors. It was human interaction that was like, you know what, I need more of this.
Yes.
Wow. That's right. Okay. So where did things go from there? I guess, you know, I mean, just even thinking about it now, trying to put myself in those shoes, it's like, where do you go? I mean, Google wasn't so prevalent back then where you can just pretty much find out anything at the tap of a button. So what was the plan from there?
Yeah. So the big thing then was job fairs. So you'd have large area companies coming to job fairs, meeting college students, meeting people that were young, maybe entrepreneurial, looking for something that was thought provoking, was going to create some degree of enthusiasm. And so I actually went to a job fair and wanted to do something that was, to be perfectly frank, a bit more 9-to-5.
Right.
What I was doing at graduate, I was actually working night shift. So it was taxing on my social life, unfortunately, but there were elements of it that were so rewarding, but I knew I wanted a little bit more life structure. And so I started to really explore different types of environments where I would really enjoy what I was doing. I was very fortunate, James, that I lived outside of Philadelphia, because in many ways, it's sort of the mecca of drug development and life science companies.
Mm-hmm.
So between large pharmaceutical companies and biotechs and CROs, I actually had a lot of different opportunities that were exposed to me. And so I ended up going to work for a large pharma right outside of the Philadelphia area.
Did that come from that job fair? Just making someone
from that job fair. Yep. Yes.
Wow. I'm sure there'll be people listening to this thinking, what? You know, some of the amount of applications I hear from people these days is just absolutely nuts. But so it was from the job fair, and then you managed to land a job, large pharma.
Yeah. And I think this is an important piece to my journey. I had no experience, zero experience. What I did have was enthusiasm and energy, and something that resonated with a recruiter who said, this is somebody that's trainable, somebody that's coachable. And so if I bring them into a role like this, I believe they'll thrive. And I've always kind of hung on to that because I actually really believe in that, in the way that we think about recruiting new and top talent. So in all honesty, it was a recruiter that gave me a chance with absolutely no experience and put me into a role where I was filing drug safety MedWatch forms, paper MedWatch forms, for one of the compounds. And again, having no experience, they just took a chance on me. And so I was very fortunate to be in that situation. But I think that really is what propelled my career and enabled me to have access to other organizations that ultimately, you know, set the foundation for my career. So I feel very fortunate.
I like it. I have to agree. I mean, as you know, I'm a recruiter myself, and just so many different people. And it's always those, like, you can almost tell instantly as soon as you start speaking to someone, do I like them? Do I think I could put them in somewhere? And then the rest is kind of just a bit of a tick box exercise. If, you know, have they got the experience? Yes. And in that case, almost sometimes I come off calls with people, I'm like, they're an absolute no-brainer. Like, who wouldn't want them?
That's right.
And it sounds as though you clearly, for that recruiter back then, fell into that category.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to know where that character and enthusiasm came from. Because look, none of us are motivated 100% of the time, right?
Yeah.
But where has this, you know, kind of, look, I mean, I every time I'm looking at you on the screen, you know, the audience can't see this if you tune in via Audible, but Kaya has not stopped smiling for the whole show so far. Where does this energy and this enthusiasm come from?
Honestly, it comes from my parents. My parents were first generation Americans. They immigrated to this country from India in the late 1960s.
Yeah.
And, you know, for them, it was always about the appreciation that, you know, opportunities exposed for them. Mm-hmm. For them, it was, we want to come here to make a better life for our children. I was born and raised in the US, but at that time I had an older brother who, you know, immigrated here with my parents. Mm. And my father was always, he loved, you know, what he did. He loved, you know, coming and immigrating to the US. He loved all the opportunities that he was able to step into, and he appreciated everything. And, you know, if I can, and unfortunately he's passed away now, but if I think back to how he sort of instilled that in my brother and I would say that that's really what's carried me forward. It's what's enabled me to always think of, like I said, the glass is half full and the brighter side of things, because that's just the type of person he was. He never lived with any regrets. And so that was something that he was very vocal about in our upbringing. And so I think that's where it comes from. I don't remember my father not smiling, quite frankly. He had great teeth. So I remember about him.
It just sounds huge on the gratitude side of things.
Yeah.
Just being grateful for what you've got.
Absolutely.
Clearly trying to push for more, as you know, we'll come on to. But
yes.
Just being grateful and enthusiastic. No, I really like that. Would you say that your father was perhaps one of your biggest mentors that you've had along the way, or have there been others in more of a professional capacity? Who's guided you along the way? Because you started out. So what was your job role at this point where you took this first job?
It was to be a drug safety specialist. So I actually was filing paper MedWatch forms at that time. I had no sense of what the drug development process was at the time. I didn't know how I was really contributing to ensuring the safety of patients. That was all sort of eluding me at the time, but that's what I was doing. To answer your question, yes, I think my father's been probably the most influential person in my life from a personal perspective. I have been very fortunate to, along the way, have come across individuals that have guided me and have led me in the right direction, have always given me good advice. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they were encouraged by my interest and my passion for doing what I was doing. So I've had some really great characters in my life throughout my career that have really helped to lift me. Mm-hmm. And I don't take for granted, people giving me sound advice, whether that's thinking critically, whether that's, admiration, whether that's supporting me. I've always valued feedback, because I do believe feedback is a gift. I've just had a lot of people along the way that have really, really supported my journey. So I feel very fortunate.
Perfect. And look, let's talk about that journey then, because came in at this kind of, didn't need the experience, managed to get the job for your enthusiasm almost alone by the sound of things. You're now almost running the show as Senior Vice President of Clinical Development Operations and probably have a whole army almost under your control. How have you gone from that to that? Talk us through that roadmap.
Yeah. So again, as I mentioned, I was very fortunate, and this was during a time where telecommuting wasn't really a common thing, right? So you didn't have a lot of remote positions. Mm-hmm. Technology wasn't where it needed to be. And so it was important that you were in an environment where you could have positions in brick and mortar offices.
Of course.
So again, area worked in my favor quite a bit, as a product of that. But I can tell you that every step that I've taken in my career has been an opportunity that somebody who took stock in me, that I proved myself to, actually exposed to me. So I've been very, very fortunate in that way, because that's actually what's allowed me to have access to so many different environments. Mm-hmm. After leaving large pharma, I ended up stepping into the CRO industry and pretty much almost exclusively went into kind of a service provider environment in life sciences. Mm-hmm. And that came through, through somebody that I knew professionally, I had worked with in more of a supplier, a relationship, who was, again, willing to give me an opportunity, willing to give me a chance, and really kind of brought me into that CRO environment. One of the things I remember early in my career, because I almost immediately stepped into project management from that point forward. Mm-hmm. And it was really these sort of inherent organizational skills that I was able to demonstrate. I did eventually go back and get my PMP, because that's really been kind of a foundational for me in terms of my career.
Yeah.
But those were some inherent skills that I was exhibiting in the way that I was taking command of project work, of delivery work, of timelines, and, really carefully managing budgets. And I was sort of protecting the company's money, so to speak. I moved into that CRO environment almost immediately, into project management roles.
Wow. That's fairly, again, look, that's probably for me as a recruiter, our main bag is CRA, CPMs, yep, and upwards, really. And I know that most people who are looking for PMs, senior PMs, are so stringent on what they look for.
Yep.
And it must have been this, must have had so many years of experience. But I think, you're perhaps proof that, someone who's got maybe 10 years of experience but isn't great sometimes has basically just got 1 year of experience. They've just done it 10 times.
Yes.
Whereas you're the opposite end of the scale. And to go back to your baseball analogy, you have clearly stepped up to the plate, right?
Yeah.
So I think this was one of the things, and I remember now, I was fascinated about the fact that you'd gone straight in at this level and then progressed almost just as quick. Was it the same kind of characteristics that you think got you into those positions that then allowed you to progress, or was it things like the PMP certification and other things that kind of, was there a different level to go to, you went on to become a director, etc.? Is there a difference, again, for the audience tuning in?
There absolutely is. And I think, again, there are you know, there are some sort of inherent skills that people possess that I think align them well with certain positions. That seemed to happen to me just kind of naturally, because it was just inherent in the way that I behaved. So yeah. I was very fortunate to get that first PM position that allowed me to then really cultivate my career around that, right? Because then it was then proving myself in that job. So to mm-hmm. me, it's always been about that. That's what's really helped elevate me in my career. The PMP actually helped quite a bit in that it allowed me to understand different types of PM methodologies. So when you're thinking about agile project management or waterfall project management, those are applicable in different parts of the industry. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me technical skills that really helped to elevate me as well too. So it's certainly something that I benefited from greatly. But at the end of the day, it's about proving yourself and it's about creating trust. So when you're in an environment where someone is entrusting you to something as important as my drug development program, and you do it and you do it well, that gives you the credibility to then be able to move into other roles in the organization or other roles outside of your organization. But that becomes really, really fundamental. But James, I got to be honest with you, none of it is going to happen unless you're actually passionate about doing that job.
It comes back to that enthusiasm piece again, doesn't it? You know, you could be amazing, but unless you're kind of speaking up and enthusiastic, people don't necessarily want to take notice. I know that's what I'm like with in my business as well. You know, if someone, I don't care whether they've got 10 years of experience or, you know, 2 months, if they are amazing and they're like, I want to do this, I want to do this, and they're banging on my door, I'm like, absolutely. There you go. Let's do it. You know, and I think that's the thing that you're talking about here.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it's so important, not to digress here, but as you're probably well aware, because this is what you're living day in and day out, we are in unprecedented times right now in the labor market. And we almost have to go back to some brass tacks, which is thinking about how we can invest in our next generation of professionals. Mm-hmm. And it's really helping to cultivate talent. It's helping to identify coachable talent, because it's not all about 10 years of experience or 10 years of therapeutic alignment. You've got to make the effort, and it is effort. It's very intentional to take those individuals and really invest the time in bringing them up, because we're going to miss the boat if we don't do that. So I think that becomes a really, really critical situation given the great resignation. And I think a lot of people are at the beach. I'm not sure, but we've seen an exodus in pretty much every industry, and we've got to think a little bit differently about how we're going to invest in people and develop people.
I think you're spot on. Otherwise, there's just going to end up just being a massive skills gap, you know,
yes.
between those who have got 10 years of experience and those that can't in because they don't have 10 years of experience.
That's right.
It's like, what's going to happen to that 10 years worth of people?
That's right.
It's like, you know, something's got to be done. And I often ask the question about, you know, what we can do. And it was good and interesting to hear you talk about it earlier, that there is now courses, you said, that are specific to clinical research. Because I wasn't aware, and everyone I speak to has fallen into this game. And it's just like, at what point is anyone going to realize that there needs to be courses like this, really?
Yep.
Otherwise, it's just, as I say, it's going to fall flat and there's going to be that massive skills gap.
Yep. Agreed. And that's across every domain. So I know we're focused on clinical positions, but I would say that's true for your next generation of programmers and data managers and clinical data coordinators, you know, individuals that come in to the market with strong programming skills. Maybe they know Python as a language, or they know R as a language. Again, takes a little bit of time to cultivate them, to invest in them, to help them understand their contributions to drug development and clinical research. Mm. But if they've got those fundamental programming skills and they're enthusiastic and they're wanting to learn, companies are going to now have to think a little bit differently about how they're recruiting, because we're going to continue to see that gap.
Precisely. Well, look, from, I guess, your PM days, as I say, look, you... as I said, stepped up to the plate almost. It seems as though time and time again, if I were to look at your resume, as it may be, you then went to kind of director level. You're now at SVP level. Look, talk us through your the current situation. So you're with Catalyst Clinical Research.
Yes.
you know, I've seen some amazing things about the company on LinkedIn. And we talked briefly before we jumped onto the pod here about getting back to conferences.
Yes.
How has your day changed from, you know, that initial drug safety specialist gig or, you know, even before that being a nutrition specialist? How has your kind of daily routine changed, your habits changed, your life changed effectively, because you've got a couple of kids now, by the way, as well, which I heard. So how does it all look now?
So it's amazing. It's amazing. And I find myself looking in the rearview mirror time and time again at my journey, both professionally and on a personal level. I actually don't have kids anymore. I've grown men, which is actually kind of amazing, because I don't think that I'm old enough to have grown men in my head. But I do. And they've been very much part of my career journey because they've been along for the ride. You know, Catalyst, you know, as I mentioned to you, you know, I oversee our CRO operations. So day to day, it's problem solving, it's supporting staff, it's helping with training needs, it's supporting our customers, it's supporting our people, it's, you know, thinking about our business needs. So there's never a dull moment. It's a you know, busy time of year. It's always busy for us in the CRO industry, but, you know, COVID's exposed a lot of challenges for a lot of different industries, but in the clinical research space, the opposite has happened. Probably in part because more and more companies at that time were really investing in drug development research. It was, you know, there was a platform for it. So we had some pretty exponential growth at Catalyst during that period of time. But if I take a step back, James, I joined the company in 2019.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the organization is really an amalgamation of some really, really powerful anchor companies that, you know, really had demonstrated proficiency and success in their domains. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one company was focused on resourcing solutions, so really providing that staff augmentation to industry. Another company was focused on data solutions, so really being that best-in-class stats and data management organization. Third company came into the fold that really did oncology research exponentially well. Mm-hmm. In a complicated environment with complicated therapeutics, in an unmet, you know, in patients with unmet needs. And then of course, our most recent anchor company really helps us bring a great deal of depth in Europe and understanding that European climate and obviously has that sort of consulting business. So we've been very fortunate to really be able to anchor the organization around these foundational companies that had such specialization. Mm-hmm. So I came in a bit, I would say, on the ground floor in our sort of first chapter, which was when the first two companies came together. Right. And we didn't really have a CRO division.
So how many were there in the team that I'm just trying to picture this? So, because now, you know, I know that the headcount has gone way up in recent times, but so what was it? Was it like when you came in the door then?
Yeah, so it was interesting. So as I mentioned, I came in on the what I feel like on the ground floor, which has been really exciting to kind of look back and see where we've come from. Mm. At the time, the CRO division was probably about 30 staff, right. And that was largely focused in on this stats and stats programming solution we had from one of our anchor companies, mm-hmm. where they were providing CRO solutions, but obviously supporting just those downstream services.
Yeah.
And so from that, we've now built the organization to a pretty robust portfolio. And my organization, which is that CRO division, has about 200 employees and about 80 contractors now. So we're about 300 strong since 2019. Yeah.
God, that's some change. I mean, I guess the admin of managing kind of and liaising with 30 people is a lot different to what it is now with like 300.
100%.
How are you with names?
I'm actually pretty good. And again, that comes with a very intentional focus on culture, which as you've probably heard, because I know you know some of my colleagues at Catalyst, unlike most of my colleagues, I actually didn't know anybody at Catalyst. I was introduced to our CEO, Nick Dyer, by a mutual friend who's been a mentor to me for many, many years, who is also in the industry and you know, is actually one of our clients. So she introduced us. We became very friendly, and I was quite enamored by his vision of this organization. And I would say the one thing that really struck me about Nick from day one is his heart was huge, and his vision was so sound and so reasonable, and his focus on investing in people to really drive performance in other areas of the business was actually really unique in the CRO industry at the time. And that's really played out in our organization and has really become the undercurrent of who we are today. So that to go from that, which was an idea and a brilliant idea at that, to then be at a size, you know, where we're actually a mid-sized player now. When you think about it, we're about 700 strong in total, and that includes our support services, our resourcing organization, and then of course the team that I oversee as well too. So it's been exciting.
Incredible. Yeah. I mean, just to hear you talk through that, I mean, from kind of your, as you walking in on that ground floor level to now what it is, just must be, as you say, you probably haven't had time to sit back and reflect on how things have changed, because we're only talking 2019. It's like barely any time's passed at all for that sort of growth. Is pretty incredible.
It's pretty incredible. And I actually describe it in dog years, because that's actually how it feels. So each year actually feels like 7 years, because the growth has been so exponential, and the environment has changed so dramatically in that period of time, right? We stepped into this a year before COVID, not knowing what COVID was going to expose for us, at a time where we were still really trying to create some market share. You know, people knew us as individuals, and a lot of our business in the early days were really framed around those business relationships, people that entrusted us as individuals that were willing to give us a chance, to then go from that to really creating an organization that is resonating in the market, that people really see the value, people really see the unique attributes that we bring, is actually really cool. It's really cool.
I think so. And I see a lot of you folks on LinkedIn and things like this, and it's always really good. And you can almost feel that culture vibe coming through whenever I see Nick and the team as well.
But
it can't have just been plain sailing. It never is, right? What would you say has been perhaps the biggest challenge? Because as I say, so much must have changed from kind of two entities, 30 staff in your team, to various others, 700 in total. What has been the biggest challenge along that path?
So every day is a challenge, right? Every day is an opportunity, and every day is a challenge. You know, again, we did this, we had this growth journey against the backdrop of a global pandemic. So that in and of itself exposes challenges that are unknown, because no one knew. No one knew what this was going to do to the clinical research business. No one could have predicted what it would do to the labor market, which, as you know, the CRO industry, without staff, without the ability to find people and talent, you know, we don't have a business model.
That's a whole nother show. That is, you know,
on the recruitment
and the resourcing side of things. Don't worry about that. Okay, I know it far too well.
Right. So if you think about the unknowns relative to those things, and then really seeing that growth, which to be perfectly frank with you, there are moments where I look back and think, I can't believe that's happened. We had to be intentional about a couple of things. The first was, as I mentioned to you, culture is really important to us. And you know, you have to be very intentional about that culture. And as you start to bring in other elements into that type of environment, you have to be very intentional about making sure you're evangelizing it constantly. And it plays out in the way that we all work together, the way that we behave, the way that we problem solve. We're an organization that really thinks about things like conflict debt, as an example. We have a training and development director in our organization who is just an incredible addition to our organization, but she's actually allowed us to see things from a different vantage point. And we think of things like conflict as actually extremely healthy. And you want to ensure that those inherent principles and that language that really speaks to your values as a company, that really speaks to how you want the market to view you, that really speaks to how you want to deliver to your clients. You have to be really intentional about playing and repeating that constantly. Mm-hmm. And so growth really makes you think about that and makes you think about how you ensure you're constantly doing that. And again, you also have to then stay relevant. So you have to innovate and you have to evolve and you have to think differently. And you've got different environmental factors that you've got to solve for. Like, what do I do with the fact that I can't send a CRA to a site? So you've got those business elements that are just kind of, you know, table stakes. They're just part of the job.
Yeah.
But then you're trying to do something different. And now you're having to do it at a clip you hadn't anticipated. So it creates a lot of complexity, right?
Imagine. And you've got to make sure I don't envy being in your shoes at that point, Kay, I have to say.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. So look, it sounds like you've made a few adaptions there and taken on, as you say, you've been, I guess, thoughtful about how things have gone ahead to ensure success. What would you say if you were to name kind of one of the biggest achievements or successes, either for Catalyst as a business or you individually in your team, what would you kind of list that as?
So I think one of the things that we've been very focused on is doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you hear, you know, it's become a bit of an industry buzzword for people to talk about culture and to talk about you know, a people focused environment. It's really all about your behaviors. It's about what you do. It's not about what you say.
Yep.
And that has played out in our organization in a couple of different ways. One of which I think is really, really critical, and having worked in the CRO industry for many, many years, I've not seen. There's a lot of cooperation amongst different entities within our organization, whether that's
kind business of those development. Vertical, so whether it's stats, clinical, or is that what you mean? Or
I mean operations, or your delivery teams, mm-hmm. your business development teams, your strategy teams, your solution teams, each of which have perhaps different performance goals or performance factors, but at the end of the day, recognize that doing good work is at the core of what we do.
Yeah.
And what that does is it prompts you to think about things like, am I or am I not going to take on this business?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard decision for a CRO to make. Most CROs would say, I'm always going to take the business that's being brought to me.
Mm-hmm.
We actually dissect every single opportunity. We dissect every single project. We're not only thinking about, how can we make the trial successful, but we're also thinking about our customers at the end of the day and whether or not we can serve them in the best way. Mm. I see servant leadership play out in true form at Catalyst on a day-to-day basis. And those types of decisions are really at the center of that, where we're saying we're not going to focus on our individual needs and our individual performance objectives. We're going to think about the organization as a whole, and we're also going to think about our customers at the end of the day. So we've turned down a lot of business, and that's been a big focus for us. And I would say last year we probably turned down the same amount of business that we accepted, and we did that because we always focus on wanting to do the right thing.
Wow. Kind of that company-wide accountability then. I guess what you're talking about, the different business lines, that I need to do X so that so-and-so in this business line can do X. And as a collaborative, we will fulfill the client's needs effectively.
That's right. That's right.
Love that. And look, I guess I think it is quite unique in CRO world. I've spoken to people previously, and you know, they've said that their management team have quite literally said, we will never turn down business. And I'm just like, great. It sounds very great, you know, if you've got it on a motivational speech on YouTube or something like that. But actually, in reality, what a load of BS. It's just, you know, it doesn't work out like that, does it?
It doesn't.
So look, it sounds as though it's been one hell of a journey so far. What would you say you've learned about yourself along the way? Because I guess times have changed, right?
Times have changed. I'll tell you, and I remind Nick of this quite a bit, but one piece of advice he gave me pretty early on in the Catalyst journey was, you know, what gets you here isn't what's going to get you there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of moments where I thought about that, and I thought about what that meant for me. And it's actually something that I even utilize in communications I have with my managers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what we inherently see, particularly in the CRO space, is that you get mired in tactical things and tactical activities. It's always about completing a task. And sometimes you have a tendency of forgetting to see the bigger picture, and really recognizing how best you can support your organization. I'm inherently a doer. I talked to you a little bit about how that's actually allowed me to step into other roles in my career.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowed me to prove myself throughout my career. But as you start to get into and you get into those levels in an organization where you want to be viewed as a leader that's really going to be able to help the team do their best work, you have to fade into the background a bit, right? So I talked to you a little bit about that role of the baseball team manager, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you're creating a star team. You want them to do their best work. You want them to perform. You want them to go to the World Series. You don't want to be in the limelight.
Mm.
And so there's elements of why that becomes a really, really critical role in helping to really develop a high functioning team. And so for me, that's been quite a journey. And it's been almost accelerated at Catalyst because of all the other factors that you and I have chatted about that have really been exposed for us.
Amazing stuff. Well, it sounds as though, yeah, again, it's just that gradual progression, isn't it? And taking it one step at a time by the sound of things, but enthusiastically. So running theme with that there. And look, what's next for the company then in terms of plans for the future? Sounds like the growth has been pretty exponential. Yes. Is it a case of slowing down, keeping steady, or is it already plans for the next stage? I don't know. I mean, how much enthusiasm and energy do you folks have? So you tell me.
Yeah, no, I don't even know that we've tapped into it all. I would say this. Our growth is going to be thoughtful and strategic, but we are a growth organization. We have an investment partner that's keen on, you know, seeing this success. And one point I want to make to you, James, is that our success has always been about an ability to reinvest in our people. Mm-hmm. So our that's what our success is really about, is that's what we want to do with it. So there are, you know, continuously innovations, regions, kind of digital elements that we're always exploring because we want to continue to do good work. We want to continue to stay relevant. We also want to be smart about how we run trials. And the industry is changing and it's evolving. And, you know, we have to think about being smarter. We have to think about being more efficient. We have to think about reducing burden on sites. And so our growth is going to continue to focus on our ability to do that and to do better work. Mm-hmm. So I don't see us slowing down or stopping. But what I will tell you is that we're really thoughtful about the burden we put on our staff. And what we try to focus on is not giving them more than they can handle.
Yeah, not growing for growing's sake. It's
not growing for growing's sake, exactly.
Kind of taking it back to, you know, being critical on the business that you take on, because there's no taking it on for the sake of it.
That's right. Absolutely
amazing
right.
stuff. Well, look, okay, it's going to be amazing to watch this journey continue. I know that there's been recent acquisitions that, I've seen advertised. I've, again, just by hook or by crook, have been connected with people that are, you know, interconnected with Catalyst. It's just an amazing industry at times. So I'll certainly be following all of these pathways. But look, before I let you jump off to enjoy the rest of your day, we always finish up the show with a quick fire question round. So some of them will take you back, some of them are a bit more deep and meaning, some of them a little bit more fun. But look, the first one is, what do you say is your one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self? Kaya that was bouncing the halls in this hospital, perhaps.
One piece of advice I think I would give to my younger self is probably to recognize the signs that it's time to move on. I think that's hard for people to do. And I think people have a tendency of holding on to baggage because they think they need to. Mm-hmm. And at times you have to shed your skin, right? It's like seasons changing. It's, as I mentioned to you, you know, my journey's been a really profound one for me. It's been eye-opening. That's probably the one thing that I would say is it's just important to focus on shedding your skin when it's the right time to do so.
I like it. Know when it's time to get out of that comfort zone, I guess.
That's right.
Perfect. And look, I guess my next question then, and perhaps this is where you may have taken inspiration for this or not, but what do you say is the number one book or resource that you would recommend for our audience?
So I wish I was an avid reader, and I will tell you that that's probably the one thing I will do much more in retirement because I used to do that, pre-career. But I do actually indulge quite a bit in self-help books. And the one that I really, really, I would say live by is The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod, which may be a book that you're familiar with. He's done a couple of other series.
I've not heard it, but sounds like the sort of thing that's up my street. I'm a massive morning person, so.
I am as well. My team would tell you that I'm nocturnal as well, that I don't need a lot of sleep, just a little bit to fuel my day. But one of the things that I've always enjoyed about the book is there are some basic principles that are really related to the sort of not so obvious things that are really the secret to transforming your life before 8 a.m. And it's really living by things like, you know, silence is a gift. Waking up in the morning and you know, having affirmation, thinking about visualizing your day. What are some of the things that you're looking to accomplish? People talk about exercise and, you know, just, you know, taking a walk, you know, stepping away, maybe reading something or going on to Netflix and spending a few minutes doing something for yourself. But I always do try to make my morning for me before I step into my day. And I think what that does is it helps calibrate me. And that's really what this book and his series is about. So if you haven't read it, I recommend it.
You don't even know how much up my alley that is. And yeah, I could probably end up speaking to you far too long about that. So I will move on. But yeah, love that recommendation.
Excellent.
Look, we've talked a lot about growth, resourcing. I guess there's not a single CRO out there at the moment that isn't struggling with resourcing. But look, when people do come along, and we talked about this skills gap, you know, what would you say are the top three qualities that you value most personally when building your teams?
Yeah, so those are easy for me. I talked to you a little bit about conflict debt, which we, you know, really, really value in our organization, because the absence of conflict debt means you're not surfacing things. For me, high functioning teams, brutally honest communication, have to have it. Got to put things on the table, not sit with it, not live with it, because at the end of the day, it's going to emerge in a way that's not going to be healthy, right? So it's really important that those teams have healthy tension. I think the other thing is that, contribution needs to be fair. So there needs to be a fair share of contribution. Every member of a team needs to play their part, because all that does is it creates more burden for another team member. And again, that can create conflict. So to me, that's really, really important. And then the last one really is diversity and thought, right? You don't want to create an organization where everyone is thinking the same way. Everyone is bringing the same perspectives to the table. So that becomes, you know, a really important factor. And again, people really, really dissecting a situation and coming to the table with different vantage points so that you come to the best conclusion.
Yeah.
So I would say those are probably my top three.
I like that. I like that. I thought the third one was going to begin with a C as well then. I thought, I've heard this somewhere. cool. And look, I guess, look, we've spoken a lot about work here and your career journey. Although a couple of times we've touched on the fact that you've got two boys, or men, as they are now. so it's clearly there's a family element to life as well. But what would you say is your favorite thing outside of work?
I love to do things outside of work. I love to be outdoors. My husband's actually an avid Harley rider. So of times we'll hop on the bike and we'll go out for a ride and we'll go and see the country.
Yeah.
For me though, if I were to really boil it down, I like to spend my personal time with the people in my life that allow me to be my best. Mm-hmm. So that's my friends, that's my boys, that's my husband. I also have three dogs. So those are the people that I like to surround myself in with, regardless of what I'm doing. But that's, for me, it's brain candy. So that's really what I enjoy.
I like it. And a bit of a deeper one to close the show. But finally, what would you say is your number one golden rule for life and business that you live
by?
That's easy.
Learn to let it go.
I like it. Very short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
Going up my stream. Look, Kay, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I think you've brought, so if anyone who's listening to this needs to tune in to the video version just to see the fact that Kaya has pretty much smiled for the entirety of this. But look, Kaya, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. For anyone looking to learn more about you, Catalyst, reach out to you, etc., what is the best way for our audience to do so?
Well, that's great. So obviously LinkedIn is a great mechanism to reach out to me. You can contact me there and I'll get email or phone messages from LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. The other area, if you want to learn a little bit more Catalyst, is really to go to our Catalyst CR website. Mm-hmm. There you can find opportunities about jobs that we have posted. If you want to learn a little bit more about the company and any of our management team. So I'd say those are the two resources to utilize to reach out to us.
Fantastic stuff. Well, look, Kaya, thanks again, once again, for being a part of the Huxley Morton podcast. I'll let you get off to have an amazing day.
James, thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
All right. Cheers.